A very warm welcome to each and every one of you. Glad you could join us for episode 121 of the Sound of Football podcast. My name is Chris Oakley. It's wonderful to have your company as ever this week. And indeed, this week, like every week, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, I trust you're both well.
Yes.
I'm full of football now.
Absolutely.
Stuffed.
Full weekend and that's it. Right.
Yeah, it's football
back
everywhere.
Back in the swing of it.
Can't. It's even football on now while we're talking.
And it's going to be quite distracting. But it's okay.
Warm welcome always, and one with the pleasant summer temperatures we've been experiencing. But we're not going to be talking about that for the next half an hour. We have much more in-depth topics to discuss. This week we're going to be looking at such matters as football finance, insolvency, player wages, financial doping, all matter of different things in the next half an hour, as I say. But before we carry on, I think we need to address one thing from last week's show, Terry and Graham, and that is, particularly you, Graham, you did cause a bit of a kerfuffle by last week suggesting that people that like to divide up their restaurant bills are ne'er-do-wells and troublemakers. If I can give you a couple of bits of feedback that we had, Simon Furnival on Twitter said, "Have to say that Sound of Football have seriously offended me in their latest podcast, considering organising a boycott. My faux outrage is boiling over, and I shall have my revenge on those Sound of Football bastards."
Well, I didn't actually say it in a pejorative sense. I merely said that the sort of people who like video replays are the sort of people who like to make sure that restaurant bills are split correctly.
Michael Richard on Twitter said, "I take offence to Graham Sibley's statement in the Sound of Football podcast. There's nothing wrong with proper bill division."
Well, there you go.
Yeah, he doesn't order the wine, does he? And the mineral water for mine.
I didn't have a starter.
I only had prawns.
I think our friends from the Two Unfortunates are keeping a dignified silence, but we're also bemused by the whole matter. But let's move on that one, shall we? On to football financing and the like then this week. And it has to be said that this current situation that we see Rangers in, now down in Scottish League Division 3, is a rather peculiar one. But nonetheless, they seem to be making a decent fist of it 2 games into the season. It has led us to wonder of late what would happen if a team of equivalent stature in the Premier League was to become so financially insolvent too, say a Manchester United of this world, or a Chelsea, or even a Man City, if you can imagine such a thing. I'm going to come to you first, Terry. You're looking pensive and quizzical. If let's say Manchester United were insolvent, declared insolvent, and there's no money left in the pot, do you think they'd be chucked down into League Two? Is it as clear cut as that?
Well, the rules as they stand mean that they would be chucked down even further than that. If they were to do what Rangers did, and that is go into liquidation and then reform as a brand new club, even if they reacquired all the club's, well, not all the club's assets, but let's say they reacquired the license, the name and the stadium, mm-hmm. They would have to be relegated down to step 5 of the non-league, which I think would probably be Northern League, maybe mm-hmm. one up from there. And they would not be able to use the name Manchester United. Those are the rules currently as is. Darlington FC being the latest example of that. They finally went bust, went into liquidation. They actually did reacquire all the licences and effectively continued the club, but because they went out of administration in the CVA, they were effectively ended as a football club, and the FA relegated them to the Northern League from the Blue Square, I think. Mm-hmm. And they were forced to change their name, which they did to Darlington 1883. Mm-hmm. Now, under the rules, that would have to happen. Were Manchester United, say, for instance, we're not picking on Manchester United because we don't like them.
No,
there's only a number of reasons why we can pick on Manchester United, but because of this whole Glazer thing. They're a good example to use.
So, yeah.
Apologies to Manchester United fans for taking any faux offence, particularly Manchester United fans who like to split their restaurant bills. you may as well just turn off now. This isn't for you.
This could be painful. I mean, it would be... I think the current Rangers' situation is showing, Graham, it would be farcical for a club like Manchester United to drop so far and to have to play against, to be perfectly frank, minnows by comparison to themselves. And even though they would be rid of all their big name stars, I think perhaps as Rangers are showing you, that they'd still have residual quality left in their ranks, even if they had to bring in a whole new raft of players, and it would be a breeze. So do you think this is all rather farcical?
I guess so, but if you put the rules in place, then you've got to follow them, no matter how damaging it might prove to be to the league as a whole. I mean, I think, as you say, I mean, like we've chosen upon Manchester United purely because that's the level of the effect that Rangers going down.
Three divisions. It's a fair comparison.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, what it would be really like is if Manchester United and Arsenal went down together. Really, I mean, that's what it's really like. That's how damaging it is for Scottish football. And it's been very brave, and I've got to use my words carefully here because it's
an emotive situation.
It is a very, very emotive situation. One which most of the Scottish football fans and indeed Rangers fans that I follow on Twitter seem to have accepted quite stoically in certain respects. Yes, it's going to be a very, very strange 3 years, isn't it?
Yeah.
As they climb back. But you know, if they have got if the slate is true, well and truly wiped clean now, and they are starting again. Mm. I mean, they're still getting what they got 49,000, I think, at the weekend. So it's not going to take them too long to get back to where most people think they were.
I know what you mean by courageous. Yes. I mean, I think that the Scottish Football League were put in a very difficult position by the SFA and by the SPL, from what I can understand, because the SPL had no choice. Well, the SPL elected, and very reasonably in my view, to exclude them from the league. Mm-hmm. And they left it then to the SFL to decide whether to put them into Division 1 or to Division 3. And apparently, and I regret that I forget the press release from the SFL club who went along to the big meeting where all the SFL clubs went along, and it was basically put to them that Scottish football could collapse and die on account of all the money that would be lost if Rangers were to be out of the SPL for more than one season because of the various contract stipulations, and that they were put in the invidious position of having to make a decision that really and truly was nothing to do with them. This was none of their business. It wasn't what had happened to Rangers was none of their business. The whole fact that they had to leave the league and then re-enter the league isn't really any of their business. And they all this drama and all this apocalyptic hoo-ha was laid on these clubs, who most of the country have probably ignored for a great deal of time, and I thought that's a bit harsh. Nevertheless, they did what they think was the right thing to do for sporting reasons, and that was to say, well, look, you're entering our league, you're a brand new club, you can start at the bottom. And while I appreciate that this is a very nuanced situation, I think from a very broad sporting point of view, I think that's perfectly reasonable if you're going to enter a league that you enter at the bottom rung. It seems fair.
That's right.
Had they been in England, they probably would have they would have been compelled to start considerably lower than that, because obviously the Scottish League is and Scottish FA have a completely different setup. They're a different body. So,
yes.
But it does. However, at the risk of going into stuff that we don't know quite what we're talking about, but I mean. If Manchester United were to be, let's say, thrown out of the Premier League because they were insolvent by FA rules, and let's say that it was a situation where Manchester United had to be moved down to below Conference South level as a Phoenix club, I am wondering what kind of contracts and clauses that would trigger in the broadcasting and sponsorship deals for the Premier League.
Mm.
Yeah.
I am wondering whether or not, and I can only imagine that there must be, caveats within the agreements with Sky and ESPN and Barclays and all the other sponsors that says that you can have Manchester United out of the Premier League for one season.
Yeah.
And then otherwise things go because of the money, that the revenue that they perceive that they would lose.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
That would create, I think, a deeply unpleasant set of circumstances for the Premier League were something like that to happen, no?
Mm. And it would be a tricky one, actually. I'm suggesting they wouldn't be quite as sort of black and white as that, because they have to possibly take a bit of a punt on the club getting back to the top flight pretty soon. Because if you've got a name like Manchester United, if they have dropped out of the top flight, and they're sort of thinking, well, if we just stick around long enough, then hopefully they'll get back to where they are, and you know, maybe we can kind of get through this. But I suppose, as you say, there's a tipping point there where they realise that they're going to be losing too much revenue, and they'd rather move on and join up with someone else. So it's one of those odd kind of waiting games, maybe, that they'd have to try and predict the future and how the team will do. And as we're seeing with Rangers now, they seem to be doing well so far. As you say, I think they had the biggest ever record attendance for a Scottish League Division 3 match. I think it was
a world record for a fourth tier. I think I know that was an unofficial record, but it was being bandied around by most news sources.
I don't know how you could take gate there, because I imagine that an awful lot of fourth tier games never got accurately recorded. But I think it's probably fair to say that it's among the highest, if not the highest.
I think it's probably the highest, like anything sub second tier in the world.
Certainly post war, it is absurd in a way. I mean, this is a huge club. And that there they are knocking around in the third division, fourth division of Scottish football. Hmm. But I guess if you do go out of business, you do go out of business, and you've got to. I don't think it's fair on the club's creditors to be able to simply, you know, just walk back in as though nothing had happened.
Well, it takes away the whole idea of financial fair play, because it would mean that it doesn't matter anymore. You can cock up as much as you like.
Yeah.
You're protected. You're because you're so important to us.
The fans understand this as well, though. Yeah. I mean, maybe deep down, I think deep down they do. I mean, many of them may be very angry about the whole thing. But the other thing to consider is that, you know, the club is still there and they're still going along.
Yeah.
And surely, I mean, I don't know. I mean, from my point of view, I would support Crystal Palace in any division that they're in.
Hmm.
And I would imagine that any hardcore supporter of any football club would continue to support their club no matter what travesty befell them. They wouldn't just stop. And that's what's happened, because 49,000 doesn't turn up for a fourth division game. So clearly,
it does give them a chance to feel very, very self-righteous.
Oh, Lord, yeah. And, yeah. I mean, the chip... By the time they go back up again after three years, they're all going to be lop-shouldered. They're going to be with this extraordinary gait.
They're going to be whole cabers on their shoulders, aren't they?
Cabers.
Chip cabers.
Indeed,
they'll all be tossing in the stands, aren't they?
There's no need to be rude. I'm leaving it in, though.
Hey! Ding! Can you imagine Sky on their first derby match against Celtic when they return back to the SPL? I mean, Sky would just completely implode.
I think we're all looking forward to the Scottish Cup draw, though, aren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, look!
The warm balls will be out, won't they? Yeah.
Seeding, you say? Oh, okay. yes.
Interestingly, just in case you were deciding to take the tangent, because there is the other thing, just going back to Manchester United and this perhaps absurd notion that if they were to go out of business and then get thrown down into the leagues. It's worth bearing in mind, of course, that Manchester United already have a splinter club, and that is FC United Manchester.
Mm, yes, they do.
I think opinions on that particular club vary around this table. We won't go into it. I personally love Bjorn again. I think they're great. But it does sort of create this kind of clash. It would create this sort of clash for the club soul, because you'd have FC United of Manchester, which is the fans' sort of like antidote to the perils of the modern game, and then you'd have actual AFC Manchester United, or whatever they will be called, coming down, and then so what would happen there? I mean, you know, it would be really, really interesting. It's a bit of an aside. Mm. It's an absurd situation. I mean, I don't know how likely it is to happen, but I think if you can say that Rangers can go into liquidation, then I don't think you could say that anything is impossible in life, and we do live in weird and strange times.
Well, it is. Yeah. I mean, the whole finance of Manchester United is baffling, and I don't begin to try and say that I understand what is actually going on there with the Glazers and share prices and such. From what I read, and you know, I've got to take it all with a big pinch of salt. That huge 10% sell-off that they made in the summer netted them £75 million. Now, an abortive sale in the Far East meant that they had to take £8 million from that.
Yes.
And the actual cost of floating the company as well was also another £5 million, I think. It actually worked out that when you added up the money that they spent on Robin van Persie and the contract they've offered him, they end up with nothing.
Mm. Mm.
They've basically sold off 10% of their company, written off, and actually managed to clear none of their debt.
Mm. But is it a question of pots, though? Well, is there a Van Persie pot and is there a debt pot?
Oh, there is, but...
But the thing is, are they subpots to a big pot, and is the big pot all... The thing is,
when you add all the pluses and all the minuses, they're £453 million in the hole.
Mm. That's a lot of money, isn't it?
That is a fair amount of money. Yeah. But for a club that is purportedly worth £1.5 billion, then that's just a third of their value.
That's the key, though, isn't it, though? As long as you can service the debt, that's what everyone is told. As long as you can service the debt, it doesn't really matter.
But now they've got that. Now they've got publicly available shares, they have a very, very transparent value.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, and when that share value goes down, everyone will be able to say, well, that's 10% of their company.
The jig will be up.
Yeah. Now those shares are now $10.
Yeah. Sell. Panic.
You'll say, right, well, that all I have to do is multiply the total number of those shares by 10, and I've got the real value of that club. And if that sinks to below their debt, then all of a sudden you've got an insolvent club.
So it could happen then, listeners.
Feasibly, yes. You've made
It's not quite fantasy. Our speculations may be just that, and maybe have an element of fantasy about it. Hmm. But I do have, you know, Game of Thrones on my coffee table as we speak. So, you know, we're in fantastic mood. But
yes, exactly, yes.
Yeah,
written by former Beatles producer George Martin.
Indeed, yes, yes. And, not as good as Peppers, but still pretty good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sorry.
No, not at all. Yeah. You've been visiting that Swiss Ramble site again, haven't you, Graham? I know you've been loitering around these places. You and your statistics.
Well, you're making Swiss Ramble to make it sound like it's some kind of illicit thing that would get you into trouble if somebody found it in your
favourite. Yes. Yeah, listeners, that's not actually a euphemism. It is actually a very good blog.
They know what the Swiss Ramble is.
Yeah.
Well, some people might, you know. We have such a broad audience these days.
I was just imagining on some kind of panorama documentary. I've been doing company accounts for about 6 months now. It's not a problem. I can easily get out of it. You know, it's just a habit. Yeah, I can handle it. But you kind of lead us on nicely to the whole Arsenal situation now, because when Van Persie moved from Arsenal to Manchester United, there are a lot of people making snap judgments on Twitter, as if you can imagine such a thing. But there were, I saw a few sort of people sort of basically saying, okay, well, you know, when Arsenal want to buy a player, they have to kind of bargain and put money to one side and balance the books and all the rest of it. Whereas when Man United want to buy somebody of Van Persie's quality, they just basically hand over the cheque and it's all done and dusted. So therefore, that suggests that Arsenal are in a complete state and are now a selling club. Now, I suppose the more relevant question, Graham, is are Arsenal paying their big stars enough? Should they be paying them more? Because they seem to be walking out the door serial fashion at the moment.
I wouldn't know. Is the actual honest answer. The players who have left, there is a commonality amongst them all, and it's something that while a few people would say that's just conspiracy theories, it's something that a lot of Arsenal fans do believe is true, and that's the fact that they're all in some way represented by Darren Dean.
Okay.
Darren Dean, son of David Dean, associate of Usmanov.
So, who are we talking about here? We're talking about Robin Van Persie.
Robin Van Persie.
Samir Nasri. Yeah.
Gael Clichy. Cesc Fabregas.
Yeah.
Emmanuel Adebayor.
What about...
And Alexander Song.
All represented by David Dean's boy.
Yes.
How interesting. Probably a staggering coincidence. You're a conspiracy nut, really.
Well, yeah, but there aren't any more players there who are actually... represented by Darren Dean.
So the conspiracy theory goes thus. Darren Dean is engineering his boys away from the club in what, an attempt to undermine the board and get David Dean back?
Yep.
Or, right, so that's the conspiracy theory.
That's the conspiracy theory to also to basically see that keep Arsenal as a crisis club in the eyes of the media, to keep that meme going along.
Destabilise the club.
Destabilise the club, get a few high-profile Twitter accounts like Piers Morgan consistently banging on about David Dean.
Now, why would Piers Morgan do that?
Piers Morgan is a great close personal friend of the Dean family. In fact, when Piers Morgan was on Celebrity Apprentice, they had to do a charity auction. The first person he called was David Dean, who immediately stumped up £10,000 for a piece of artwork.
I'm shocked. Not about the £10,000, but I'm just shocked that there was a Celebrity Apprentice.
Needless to say, Piers Morgan was fired. Yeah. Not literally, sadly.
Not out of a cannon, unfortunately.
Not out of a cannon.
I'm with you on this one, right, Terry. I'm surprised. I've only just embraced the Apprentice, and I'm surprised there's a celebrity version like yourself.
I think it was for comic relief. I think it was.
That's right. No excuse.
Comic relief or something like that.
Good grief, it's thick as thieves there, aren't they? I'm sorry, I don't wish to infer with that terminology.
But, I believe you just have.
they're as thick as people who have an affinity for gathering money.
Well, certainly an interesting way of looking at things.
Yes,
No, I was just going to say, so basically there is now no one left that's being managed by...
Not at the moment. Apparently, he's been sort of basically kept away from anyone else who is actually at the club now, I think.
So what will be interesting then will be to see whether or not any more players leave Arsenal over the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they will.
I mean, obviously, I assume some will. But, I mean, shall we say more really high-profile players?
It does seem to be the most high-profile players have, in some ways, and he's not been the agent of all of them by any means, but in some ways has been... facilitated by Darren Dean.
Right, okay. But it certainly is an interesting theory.
Yes.
I don't know whether or not...
No, I was just going to say it's incredible how one man can end up sort of being the agent for so many high-profile players. That's another argument.
Well, in fact, in the old days, nearly everyone, when no one left Arsenal, nearly everyone was represented by Jerome Anderson.
Right,
and I think it's not uncommon for a lot of people at a club to be underneath the same. And you can imagine that's how it would work.
I imagine that was the case in a lot of clubs.
Yeah,
they had sort of like one guy controlling the whole dressing room to an extent.
Yeah,
back in the days, maybe when guys like Eric Hall were sort of like monstering around.
We're gradually coming to the end of the podcast, but I think we've just got enough time just to dwell on Portsmouth for a short while. They're in incredibly dire straits nowadays and have, from what we can make out, I think it is a completely new lineup, a new playing roster. What's the situation? What's the outlook for them, do you think? How do you think they will progress? Are they likely to drop further in the overall scheme of things?
What's going on with them? I mean, because they're kind of like don't exist, but at the same time they signed all these new players suddenly overnight. They managed to get a point on the first game of the weekend.
That was incredible.
First game of the season, which was impressive. Mm. But I'm not entirely certain where this money has come from, or whether or not there is any money, whether it's just gone, right, well, we still exist, so we may as well bring some players in, but what, are they going to pay them? I mean, it's a really odd situation.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, the Supporters Trust seem to be the only...
party that can do it. Yeah.
Is that right?
That's pretty much how I understand it. And they've now stepped in and sort of said, OK, well, now is our chance. But as you say, then there must be money to pay to play the players. And I've not seen much mention of that. But then maybe I'm not following it closely enough. I don't know.
No, well, it would be interesting if Portsmouth fans want to enlighten us on that. That would greatly appreciated. That just seems... I think it's a testimony to... despite what we were saying earlier about what might happen to Manchester United, this club by rights, where really any other convention would have gone out of business.
Mm. Oh yeah,
years ago, presumably.
Yeah.
But then you could say the same about Plymouth. You could say the same about Crystal Palace,
Luton.
Yeah.
Oxford.
Oxford. Yeah, sure. By any other in any other kind of realm, in any other kind of business. They would have
been long gone
by now. So for as long as they are clubs, then I guess there will always be somebody available to rescue them. I guess perhaps in the grand scheme of things, the level of Portsmouth's liabilities aren't such that they can't be perhaps rescued by either a consortium or even if a sugar daddy were to come along. The difference between them and, say, Manchester United would be, given the scale of the debt there, that you really would need to find, Ming the Merciless or someone with some serious resources to be able to take over a club like that. I mean, it requires, whereas with Portsmouth's liabilities probably are relatively speaking just as crippling, would be just as crippling, but perhaps still in comparative terms manageable.
Yeah.
I guess that's the only thing that I can think of. It's extraordinary, really, that they're still going. I mean, it's great that they're still going.
Of course.
But you do kind of wonder, what's happening here.
Yeah. Mm. It does always... It's something I know we've come back to quite a lot, is the fact that all the time that the clubs get away with it, they come back from the brink. Does it actually just instill a feeling of sort of invulnerability in football clubs?
Hmm.
Well, it's interesting because you use the term "get away with it." I mean, that's, I suppose that's probably what it is, though. But I think a lot of people wouldn't see it as that. They would just say that this is a club that's just doing its best to try and provide entertainment, provide to try and win football matches.
Well,
a club supporters would say, "Well, look, we're not getting away with anything. We're just trying to watch football here."
Yeah, it's one of the things that's always said is the fact that it's always the supporters that are the ones to suffer for it, isn't it? Because they're the ones who haven't done anything wrong. They're the ones who've turned up every week.
Yeah, of course.
And because it was usually some, I don't know, gun runner who owns your club who ran away with all the money, then
that's right. And then of course they've gone and departed the scene, and they don't get punished. And of course it's the club and the supporters that are left with the unpleasant legacy. This really means is tighten up your fit and proper persons rules, regulate your clubs better.
Mm.
If you have a kind of laissez-faire approach to how these clubs are being run, and then this is what's going to happen. And responsible supporters groups, and there are many of them out there, are frequently banging on the door of their boardrooms, of their clubs, saying, look, you need to share with us. We want transparency. We want to know. We want to be able to scrutinise your books so that we can be happy that you are running this club and that you're not just going to leave us high and dry.
But all the time that clubs aren't even compelled to actually tell people who owns them.
No, not in England, and not by the looks of things, not in Scotland either.
Yeah.
No.
If Rangers' example is anything to go by. In France they are, in Germany they are.
Yes.
And clubs get relegated for not being able to fill the financial criteria, and there's no bones made about it.
No, that's the way it is.
And I don't know.
You live by the sword and die by the sword, yeah.
Yeah, and so it is difficult, but at the same time, I mean, yes, the victims are the supporters, but in fairness, as I said earlier, the supporters still follow the club as long as there is a club there, and it's been well demonstrated now that if the club dies, it can reform, and the supporters for the most part will still go.
Mm-hmm.
Rangers being an excellent example of that, and hats off to the Rangers fans for sticking with their club and not abandoning their club just because they got relegated. Mm. I think that demonstrates an awful lot. A lot I said about those guys, but that is a good thing. Yeah. Of course, the real genuine victims are the club's creditors. Now, these are the people who are not being paid, the people who are owed money.
And I usually think small businesses.
In many instances, small local businesses were a big contract for me. A local football club can put food in people's mouths and really, really contribute to the local economy. And that kind of damage takes an awful lot of time to repair. And I think that's probably the thing to remember the most about all of this is, you know, all right, fine, your club's been relegated two divisions, big deal. Okay, if you know, at least you're not out of pocket.
No, you can stick by your club beforehand. You'll still have a club to support, with a fair wind, but yeah. Indeed, as I think you said a long time ago, actually, Terry, on one of the previous podcasts, you know, if the club completely disappears off the face of the earth, there's usually the strength of passion there that will resurrect the club from the ashes and build a new version of it. That much is certain.
Yeah.
Most of the content on this podcast is only 7% original.
Oh, yeah.
The rest is regurgitated.
Mm. And as if to prove that point, I now have to wrap up with some regurgitated material. So, anyway, hope you enjoyed all of that. And we urge you to get in touch and give us your views. Details to follow. On that subject, actually, we did try and prove that we are actually in some way interested in doing a season's preview. Because on our Facebook fan page last week, we did ask a question to those of you that are interested to sort of say, who do you think will be relegated from the Premier League this season? We had a good response to that. Thank you to all of you who got involved. It seems that nearly one in three of you said QPR. And after the weekend's results, I can't fault your judgment. Wigan were the next most popular choice, 17%. And then various other names mentioned, Reading, Norwich, Swansea, Sunderland, Stoke, Southampton. Gary Swan said Reading, QPR and Wigan, although I hope Wigan stay up. And Julie Threadgold said QPR, Swansea and Sunderland, although after today's news, i.e. Van Persie leaving, Arsenal is a possibility. Sorry, Graham, had to put that one in there.
Boom.
Yes. So there we are. So,
Shaheen's arrived. Everything's fine.
So thank you.
Is Shaheen gone, is he?
I suppose he was having his medical today. He was having his picture taken and everything. Yeah, so
he's a classy player.
I know. I saw him score at the West Ham. It's a fantastic goal. You should have seen it.
Yeah, I saw it too.
Well, you didn't. You're getting the beers.
You're getting the beers.
We can go now.
Yes.
Anytime you're ready.
So anyway, thank you to those of you who have been getting involved on that on Twitter and Facebook. And one other thing before we go, just to inform you of, is that we've got a Socrates event coming up, a little mini Socrates really, coming up on the 31st of August. If you're a football blogger or a podcaster and you'd like to join us at the Sports Bar and Grill, Victoria Station in London on August 31st, then do get in touch with us. Go to the Socrates website, which is s.ocrat.es. And you'll find all the details on there. Let us know if you can get along. It'd be nice to see you. Just having a little informal event on this occasion for those of you that have been to these things before. But we hope you can get along to that. And just finally to say, if you want to get in touch with us, give us your views on any of the stuff that we've been talking about on this podcast, you can do so at the blog site, which is sofpodcast.com. We're on Twitter at Sound of Football and on Facebook, facebook.com/soundoffootball. There you go. That's the end of another podcast, and we hope you'll join us for the next one, episode 122. So, for the time being, from myself, from Terry, and from Graham, it's a fond farewell. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.